All right, are you ready for this? Because I'm actually.
I am so ready. Tell All right. If you bust out a fourth grade recorder, I am going to lose it.
All right. How funky is your chicken? How funky is your chicken? How loose is your goose? Your goose is totally loose. So come on, all you hog fans. So come on, all you hog fans, and shake your caboose. And shake your caboose.
Woo! You got way too into it.
When I started this, my other half was working in the office, and he came out during the cheer, and he did the whole thing, and we were confused at first about the goose and caboose part, and then so that's the only reason it stuck in my head. So I appreciate the cheer.
Thank you.
Well, we were watching this, and Nina had never seen it before. And so when that song came on, or that cheer came on, I just like knew it from watching the movie. And she's like, wait, do you know this from like from watching this? I said, yeah. And she said, we used to do that cheer.
Oh,
like
my
when
God.
She was a kid in cheerleading, they used to do that. I guess that's like a real cheer. I had no
it's
idea.
It's a real cheer.
It is a real cheer. Yes.
That's incredible.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was also a cheerleader when I was 10 years old.
Were you really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Did you ever Only have then. A cheer that matched that the beauty of this one?
Yes, we did that one.
Oh, you did that one specifically?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, not hogs because the team wasn't.
Yeah.
Casey, are you hogs. Buffy?
No. Nope.
Really? You didn't tell me I was going to be on the show with Buffy.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's the surprise, yeah.
Ready? Okay. How funky is your chicken? How funky is your chicken? How loose is your goose? Our goose is totally loose. So come on, all you hog fans. So come on, all you hog fans. And shake your caboose. And shake your caboose.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to How I Met Your Monster, the show where we discuss the introductions to your favorite movie monsters. I'm Zach.
I'm Danny.
And I'm Casey.
And today, we are in week two of high school. We survived the alien invasion of Mary Beth Louise Hutchinson, but now we got another problem. All the damn vampires. But that's okay, because today, we have a very special guest joining us. She is a veteran in the world of horror entertainment, having written for such websites as Dread Central and the former fan favorite FearNet, and now serves as managing editor at Daily Dead. Her brand new book is titled Monsters, Makeup, and Effects, Conversations with Cinema's Greatest Artists. We are so thrilled to welcome Heather Wixon to the show. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you so much. It's funny, when I hear the word veteran now, I'm just like, oh no, is that code for old? I think I'm old.
Veteran in horror just means you're the go-to person for all things horror.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I don't know about that, but thank you. But I've seen some things, kids, I'll tell you that.
So Heather, how did you get started in horror?
I'll give you guys like the shorter version, because if I give you the longer version, that'll be like the whole like an hour of the podcast, and we have Buffy to talk about. So the short story is that back in 2007, I was kind of like, I guess I was going through my midlife crisis back then, because like I'd been working since I was like a teenager, and I was stuck in like just these office jobs that just meant nothing to me, and I was kind of dealing with some things in my marriage, and I just didn't know what I wanted, and I felt really restless. And I'd always loved writing, and I'd always intended to go into writing after I graduated high school, and then life just sort of took a detour, and that didn't happen. And then so I started kind of doing like some writing for like a local newspaper here and there, covering like board meetings and boring stuff like that. And I just, it was fine, but it still wasn't what I wanted to do. And it was the 2007 Flashback Weekend Horror Convention in Chicago. And I was there as a fan. And also there, was Adam Green, and he was promoting Hatchet before it came out.
Okay.
And he told this really inspiring story about Dee Snider and how he had written Dee Snider when he was a kid and somehow kept in touch with him. And Dee, you know, inspired him to like find your passion and, you know, make no excuses and just go for it. And I was like, gosh, you know, if I could do anything, I'd want to write about horror. But I was, it was still kind of like, I didn't really know how the everything worked, everything like with the bigger sites. Cause back then the big three were like Bloody Disgusting, Shop Till You Drop, and Dread Central. And I knew nobody. I lived in the Chicago suburbs, so I wasn't like in Los Angeles to be around people. And I just happened to find, like, a few days later, I was on Craigslist and I found an ad for this new horror themed website, and they were looking for reviewers. And I was like, sure, why not? Let's see what happens. Fabian, who was the owner of the site, actually wrote me back within like 15 minutes and was like, let's talk. And he ended up giving me sort of my first job in the industry. And I still remember my very first review was for the Invasion remake that was with Nicole Kidman. And
we were just talking about that last episode. That's a good movie.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. And so it was funny because I was like, okay, you know, and I felt really like official and that it was out there. And so I was still kind of doing stuff on my own terms. And I had gotten invested, I guess is the best way to say it, with the production of an independent horror movie that ended up going to Sundance early 2009. But I couldn't get credentials because nobody knew me still, and I was still making my way. So I just basically was like, well, I'm going to go to Sundance anyway. And so I used to do these, like, it's like, they were called like Tupperware parties for like with jewelry. And it was like this company called Leah Sophia.
Okay.
And so I was used to do these parties part-time, and I was like, I'm done with that. So I just started selling like jewelry to all the ladies in my office so I could fund my trip to Sundance. Awesome. So I put all the money together, you know, bought my tickets for the screenings and stuff like that, and took myself out there, and it was like the most amazing thing ever. And I was like completely overwhelmed, but I was loving every minute of it. And the night that I was packing to head back home, I got a message from Steve Barton at Dread Central, and he was like, hey, are you at Sundance? And I said, yeah. And he was like, oh, would you want to do some stuff for us? And I was like, sure, why not?
That's amazing.
And then I just sort of snowballed from there. And then he wanted me to come work with them. I had to kind of work some stuff out with Fabian from my other site, which was, it used to be called Terror Tube. I think it actually still exists in some infancy form, which is kind of weird. okay. But so I kind of worked it out with him, and then eventually transitioned over to Dread Central full time. And it was like right after Sundance, I ended up losing my day job back home, because our biggest clientele at my office was real estate agents, and the real estate market was tanking. And so I was like the first wave of people to be let go. And I was like, you know, maybe this is like a sign, but what do I do with this? I'm still in the Chicago suburbs. And I had had a trip planned to LA anyway for my birthday, and I started sending out just regular resumes out for work to people, to places in LA, and ended up getting a job basically while I was on vacation. So I came home, packed up my life in like 5 days. I had five cats at the time. I dropped my cats off at my mom's. My friend kept my car. And like, I flew out here. And then a month later, came back for most of my cats. I left one with my mom because she was like, I'd never lived anywhere but Illinois in my entire life. So I knew she was feeling weird. And, you know, basically moved cross country with four cats in a crate, which I don't recommend. It's already hard enough to drive for 22 hours in two days, let alone when you've got four cats in the back of your car. Like, what are you doing to us?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
And basically just kind of like started doing my own thing. And then I was with Dread Central for about 4.5 years and decided it was time to sort of branch out and do some new stuff. I wanted to push myself a little bit. And that's how I ended up with Daily Dead. Because I'd met Jonathan, my boss, at Comic-Con a few years prior. And there was one thing that he said to me that I still can't believe to this day, but it always stuck with me. And it's why I'm always really open to people, especially when they're starting out. Is the one thing he said to me was, you know, when I met him, it was his very first Comic-Con. And he said, I was the only person out of all the press people that actually took the time to talk to him during Comic-Con. And to me, I was just like, what? Like, why would people be like that? Like, I've never, you know, if somebody's starting out and they want to talk, like, I will always talk to anybody. But we got along really well. And as of this week, it's actually my 8th year of being at Daily Dead.
Wow.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the short version. Could you, if like I said, the long version is like a whole hour. Nobody has time for that. But yeah, so it was just, you know, it was kind of like right place, right time in certain cases. And then it was just kind of, I gave up a lot to do it, but I'm glad I did because I've been able to be, you know, do a lot of things that I just never would have dreamt in a million years that I would have been able to be a part of.
That's amazing. Right. You literally just made it happen. That's so cool. Yeah.
I did. And it's, you know, and I see a lot of folks these days and a lot of up and comers where, and I don't mean this in like a weird way, but they'll be like, well, why am I not getting these opportunities and this and that? And mm-hmm. I always tell people you have to be patient and just put in the work.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. it's not like I moved out here to LA and suddenly I was doing huge interviews and things like that. Like you have to put in the work. People have to be able to trust you. It takes a little time. And, you know, so I always tell people, like, you know, if you have the ability to just do the work and find your niche and start walking your own path, like things will happen. Like they will. You just have to be willing to sort of wait it out a little bit.
Yeah,
that's so true. And that's such good advice, because it is easy to get sort of, you know, you kind of fall off course a little bit if you're not getting exactly what you are expecting. But you're absolutely right. If, as long as you're putting in the work and enduring, more often than not, something will click.
Yeah. And the thing is also mm-hmm. too, like, you know, it's, you know, we can put all of our time and energy into something that we're really passionate about. Like I can do an interview that I'm like super duper proud of and I'll put it out there and I'm like, yes, this thing is amazing. And like, I might get like one retweet, but I'll post like some goofy photo and it's like, oh, here's like 2,000 likes. And I always tell people like, don't let that, you know, don't let that deter you. Don't let that, you know, make you feel like your work is any less valuable. As long as it means something to you and you're enjoying the process, like it'll come. Like that audience will grow with you. And one of the things that's interesting is like one of our writers on Daily Dead, Scott Drebbit, like he actually, and I never knew this until a few years ago, he actually followed me from Dread Central to Daily Dead. And then now he writes for us, which
that's
is kind of
amazing.
Cool. And I never knew that. So like you never know if what you're doing matters.
Yeah.
You know, so it can feel kind of insular.
Yeah.
So I just always tell people, like, you know, as long as you're enjoying what you're doing, like that's what's important.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. So before we jump into Buffy, I'd like to know what everybody is currently watching or interested in, something you're excited for. Casey, do you want to start?
Yeah, we just started rewatching the Witcher series.
Oh, nice. I have not seen that.
It's very good.
I played the game, but I have yet to watch the show.
Oh, so my boyfriend, he played the game and read the book, so.
Okay. Oh, wow. I started playing The Witcher 3 mm-hmm. because it was supposed to, people are saying it's like the best game ever.
Mm-hmm.
And there was so much detail.
Yeah.
Which some people probably love.
Were you overwhelmed by it?
But I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, I just want to like slay dragons or something, and I have to make potions. Like, what's happening?
Well, it's funny you say that because Cody always teases me. I used to play it a lot, and he would walk in. He's like, Danny, you just play this game to like every time I walk in, you're just picking flowers.
And, like, oh yeah, looting. Like making looting is my favorite thing to do in video games. I'll just loot all day. Yeah, we started rewatching that because the new season comes out in December, I think. And but it's very good. Just fantasy.
Heather, are you a gamer at all? Have you ever played The Witcher 3?
I love video games, but I love watching them, which is weird.
Yeah.
Because like everybody, like my other half, he plays everything, and it was funny because you were talking about The Witcher making potions. Because way back, like when Skyrim first came out,
mm-hmm.
we probably put like 500 hours into that.
Oh my gosh!
It also helped that I was home for like 3 months with like really bad shingles and like a skin issue. Yeah, so I was kind of just like down and out. So I had plenty of time, but he would play like all day, and then when he would go to bed at night, I couldn't sleep. So I would stay up and like go grab his supplies, make all his stews and potions. I'd make some, you know, his armor and go sell those.
Oh, I love that.
And I remember I would always freak out, like, because like sometimes like you'd be like somewhere and like a dragon shows up and I'd be like, oh my God, how, and you can't fast travel because if the dragon's nearby, they won't let you. And I'm like, oh my God, I gotta leave. I gotta go. There's a dragon. I'm like, I'm gonna end up dying. So I love that Witcher's like that as well. I love watching. So, but he's been kind of doing, we've been playing the Cobra Kai game lately, which is one I can actually handle.
I didn't know there was a game.
There is. I scored it at Christmas for like $10 and it is so worth it.
Oh my God. That sounds incredible.
Yeah, it's basically like Cobra Kai, like in a Street Fighter style.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And
you kind of
go through and work through different levels and stuff. And it has like the voices and everything.
Oh, that's so fun.
And it's really sweet too, because like Ed Asner's in it. So, and we just recently lost him and stuff. So it's kind of fun seeing Sid show up and everything. So, but yeah, I wish I had the capabilities. Like I remember when I first came out here and somebody wanted me to play Left 4 Dead. And I was like, oh, you don't want this. And they're like, no, you're going to be fine. And I was just like the whole time, just like my character's like staring up at the ceiling. Yeah. I'm trying to hit things. It was not a good thing.
Oh, that's great.
Heather, have you been watching anything recently that you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you're into horror, like most of us are probably watching season 3 of What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh yeah,
which just started up yet, and it's so great. I love that show so much. So that's been super fun. And I actually just watched a few days ago. It just arrived onto Shudder. It's this movie called Superhost.
Oh, I've heard of that.
That's what I was going to talk about. That's the only one I watched this last week.
Oh, so I just stole your thing. Well, then I will shut up and let you take it.
Oh, no, absolutely not. No, I would just.
We're never on the same page, so this is a good thing.
It was less of a, oh, you stole it, and more of a, oh, now I can relate to somebody because they've seen it too. So what did you think of Superhost?
I liked it. I mean, I thought it was kind of weird that like the couple themselves like don't really fight back against her, but I thought Gracie Gillen was fantastic in this movie. Like she is so good, and there's a lot of different layers to a character that very much could have been one note.
Yeah,
and she is so good, and there is like one kill in this movie that I was like my jaw hit the floor and I was like holy crap.
All right,
I think I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I was not a very big fan of the ending, but that's just a personal preference.
Yeah,
I
mean, I think for me, I think the sad part of it is that I realized that like it's probably pretty dead on in terms of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, you know, you think, oh, everything's no, this is how the internet would be. So yeah, it's hard to talk about without giving anything away, but I was like, unfortunately, I think it was a little too correct.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bummer, but I loved Gracie. And if we could get more Gracie, I think I would be okay with that.
Yeah. I don't want to say too much either, but yeah. I agree. Danny, have you been watching anything?
Right now I'm watching the new season of American Horror Story, which I am so happy to say that I really enjoy. Because I know a lot of people can have sort of mixed feelings with a lot of seasons. Which I kind of love about, that's what I love about the show is because it is sort of like all over the place. But this one is, it's doing what I was kind of hoping it would do, if that makes sense. Like just atmosphere wise, the aesthetics, the story, the actor, the characters. I love that. Oh my God, I just completely lost her name as the main character this season. Oh, Lily Rabe is the main character, which is really nice. Otherwise I'm really just kind of like, I'm also watching Lego Masters, which has nothing to do with horror. Though they did build a haunted house, so that kind of counts.
I have to catch up on Lego Masters. We watched season 1. We haven't gotten into season 2 yet.
Season 2, they're killing it. I'm really into it.
Awesome.
We came into it late in the season, so my partner and I were like, oh my God, there's like 7 episodes. We're like sitting down, just like, just Lego. But yeah, other than that, I did see, again, also not at all horror, just saw the new Marvel movie, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which was a lot of fun. Really like that. I'm really excited because, some of it is set in San Francisco and I'm making the move next month, so. It was like a travel guide kind of thing a little bit. I was like, okay, sure. I recognize that area.
Nice. All right. Do you guys think it's time to meet our monster?
Amen.
You opened it. We came. I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left.
Explorers in further regions of experience. Demons to some, angels to others.
Call your meatloaf.
When I was telling Nina about this movie, and I was telling her Christy Swanson was Buffy, but I said, oh, it also has Hilary Swank in it. Mm-hmm. She said, oh, I think Hilary Swank should be Buffy.
Oh, that would have been
fun. And it was weird because I've grown up with this movie, so like I only knew it as Christy Swanson. So it was interesting to see it from a different perspective, being like, yeah. Oh, you think Hilary Swank should be Buffy? That's weird.
I mean, I have never seen it until yesterday, and I could have dug Hilary Swank.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I tell you guys my embarrassing Hilary Swank story?
Please. Absolutely.
So I don't even remember what it was, but I was at, they used to always do junkets at the Four Seasons in Los Angeles, because that's like the fancy hoity-toity hotel or whatever. So I'm walking into the hotel. And there's always like a few junkets going on at the same time. They make it easier for people and stuff like that. So I'm getting into an elevator and all of a sudden Hilary Swank walks in with like her person. And I was like, oh my God, well, I'm not getting it in the elevator because like you're Hilary Swank. Like you should have your own elevator, right? And then she holds the door and she's like, no, come on in. And I was like, oh no. I was like, okay, I'm going to say something really stupid. I can feel it. And so I was just like, oh Jesus. Like she knows I know that she's Hilary Swank and she knows she's Hilary Swank. So we're standing in the elevator. And now look, Hilary Swank has done like some incredible stuff in her career. She's won an Oscar for Christ's sakes. Yeah. And I literally said to her, I was like, oh my God, I can't even tell you how much I love you in the Buffy movie, like out of everything. And then she's just like, she's like, oh, thank you. She's like, I haven't thought about that in a long time. I was like, sure you haven't, like you're over there winning Oscars and shit. But then it was funny because like a few weeks later I was in Sundance because she did the movie for Netflix, I think it was like called Mother or something like that, with the robots.
Oh yes.
Okay.
And she was like, you're the girl from the elevator. And I was like, because there was only like four of us in the room with her interviewer. I was like, I was. Oh, and she was just like, she's like, it was funny. She's like, I hadn't thought about doing Buffy in a long time. And I was like, yeah, I almost said how much I also loved you at 90210 as well, but I didn't. And she started laughing. So I was like, I always say impression. The dumbest things. Yeah.
She'll never forget. Like, leave
I imagine that must feel good to an actor. Mm-hmm. To like know that their little smaller roles and like their earlier roles have made an impact instead of just like the ones that they win Oscars for and stuff like that. That's awesome.
I mean, and I grew up basically saying to everybody like, oh, get out of my facial. You know, so she definitely made an impact. Yeah. Like she has some really great lines in the movie.
She really does.
So right here we go. Right off the bat.
Right out of the gate.
Right out of the gate. My first thought when this movie started was, oh my God, I had this soundtrack as a child and I just like wore out the tape.
Really?
I used to listen to this cassette tape all the time. I don't know why.
So funny.
But it was good.
Zach, you have good taste.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the CNC Music Factory myself. I'm a little bit older than you guys, so I was in high school when this came out.
Okay.
So I was, this was like prime.
That was perfect.
Like it was like on the, and the cusp of like eighth grade to high school for me. So this was like perfect.
That's amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So yeah, but I loved CNC Music Factory. Like so much. So I was very much a huge fan of this. And it actually, this soundtrack actually introduced me to Matthew Sweet, who I really hadn't heard of until this. And then he kind of, like, that was like 92 is when like all the indie stuff started happening. So okay. I, you know, when you talk about the soundtrack for this, I think it's a really interesting sort of like mishmash of like pop music, some rock that's kind of like on the cusp of like going off of, like, you know, sort of out of the main sort of the main stage of pop culture. And then you also have like these indie bands, because you have like Matthew Sweet and Toad the Wet Sprocket, who I also really loved because I'm an old person.
Well, they had a song on the I Know What You Did Last Summer soundtrack.
I know you did last summer.
Sprocket. I know you did last summer. that was my introduction to them.
Speaking of music in this movie, I was so surprised to see that Carter Burwell did the score, who like would go on to work with the Coen brothers, and like it's like Oscar nominated. If not, I don't even know if he won, but I was like, I saw his name pop up. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Okay. Nice. I see where we are. High class soundtrack coming up. I like it.
Yeah. Well, we do get a, I think we get a vampire sighting in one of the flashbacks.
Yeah.
But our first, what I would consider our first real monster sighting is Paul Rubens.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
On the carousel.
He opens the doorway to the vampires.
He looked like his eyes were shut. I'm just going to get this out of the way. I thought this movie was very confusing.
Well, oh, interesting.
I was very confused.
Okay, so to that note, I don't really understand the relationship between Lothos and the Slayer, whoever, you know, that she keeps changing. I don't really get their dynamic.
It's like a destiny thing. Like, you know, for every for every villain, there's a hero. So like the mere existence of Lothos, you know, lends, you know, it basically forces Buffy or a Slayer in any capacity to exist. That's why he even treats her as like this, you know, arch nemesis sort of thing.
For people like me who don't really get into that kind of thing, like when I watch movies, well, okay. I don't get super like intellectual.
Casey and,
like,
just watches Dumb and Dumber whenever
I do. Yeah, that's it.
We know.
That's it. But I don't get super in depth. Like sometimes I can, not with a horror movie, I don't typically, you know. Okay. So
you usually have the best insight.
Do I?
Zach and no. I come in like we're like, wasn't that so cool?
No, well, maybe, but I don't know. I also have had a headache for 2 days, so maybe I just maybe that was part of where the confusion lied. Didn't think they explained that very well, so I was like, when all of that was happening, I was just like, what is going on? Why?
Well, so my issue with that is that I didn't understand the relationship. I assumed it was like, okay, yeah, the Slayer is always Lothos's arch nemesis and all this stuff. But the way he would like treat her and stuff, he would say things like, I would never hurt you. And then like 2 seconds later, he swings a sword at her head.
See, another confusing thing. Why did he have a katana?
I don't know.
Sorry.
Why not?
Because he's Rucker Hauer and he's awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He probably brought it from like Lady Hawk or something. He's like, hey, I got this thing. And Fran was like, yes, that's great.
Yeah. But there was like and basing off that relationship between the two of them, how like he never really just, all the chances he had, he never like bit her or did whatever. He just kind of like toyed with her. Throughout the whole movie, I thought there was a very like non-threatening vibe.
Oh yeah.
Like I never got like an actual feeling of like, oh my gosh, these people are in danger.
Yeah, same.
And maybe that's that, you know, confused. That's just like the tone of the movie. They wanted it to be fun and all that stuff. I think I would have liked to see just a little bit more danger present.
Yeah.
I think initially the original script that Joss Whedon had done was a lot darker.
Yeah.
Because you can see sort of touchstones of this story in the storyline with the Master from the Buffy TV series. Like, I think this was like when he went and did the Master storyline, I think that was sort of him getting to fully realize the story that he wanted to do in this movie. But at the time that this was released, and you know, you've got, you know, Americans heartthrob Luke Perry in it, you know, you're not going to make a dark and gritty vampire movie. It's a bummer because there is sort of a lack of tension in the movie.
Yeah.
You don't really watch Buffy for the quote unquote stakes, if you will. you know, you just kind of watch it to, you know, just sort of see like a goofy, fun, like pop bubbly vampire movie.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I remember when I was watching the Buffy TV series, I was like, wow, this, you know, there are parts of this character that really feel like it's Lothos, like reincarnated into something actually evil, actually a real threat to Buffy, in a way that, you know, I mean, I love Rutger Hauer, but he's not exactly very scary in this.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah. I never even considered that. And Zach, I think the idea with like showing affection and stuff, you know, and I could be just talking out of my ass, but you know, like vampires in general, like Dracula, there's always like that kind of like that balance of like horror and romance. So I wonder if that was something they were kind of going for. You know, there is like that idea of seduction being something that is romantic, but also dangerous. And and for him, he's pure evil, so he takes it to like the nth degree.
Interesting that all of the other men in this movie are disgusting.
Like physically disgusting and
no, they're terrible.
No, and like I mean like in every sense of the word.
Well, yeah, I wrote down what her boyfriend says later in the movie. He says, "Keep your hand off my thang."
Yes, and the one guy asks if he can borrow her. And then he randomly slaps her butt later, and they're gross. They're so gross.
Yeah. Welcome to being a woman, especially a teenage girl in the 90s. We weren't exactly treated as anything but a commodity back then. Terrible. And I think that was also sort of a statement in terms of the movie. Like, you know, Kate, I know you said you didn't want to go deep, but you really kind of just did, because you have this character who's really only seen as somebody who like goes shopping and who's just like, you know, the hot piece that goes with the high school jock boyfriend, who really ends up becoming something so much more than that. And, you know, I know we said all the men are disgusting, but I actually really adore Luke Perry's character in this movie.
Yeah, other than him.
Because he clearly from minute one realizes the power dynamic between the two of them, and he respects that. Where he's like, this girl could kick my butt. Like, so, you know, I'm just going to let her do her thing. And I think that's like, to me, it's like really interesting, because we didn't have a lot of female empowerment in 92. Like we had Thelma and Louise in 91, but there was still, you know, it was a little bit of a backlash still. So to see it kind of reflected for teens was kind of interesting for me at the time, because like I said, we always had to fight for a lot of stuff, like to get respected in anything. So for me, like, you know, I know Christy Swanson didn't turn out to be like a super great person in real life, but like her character in this movie, like for me as like a 14-year-old kid, like I was like, she was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because she actually got to become something really powerful. And she did it like on her own terms.
They even have that great line at the end when Luke Perry's like, "You're not like other girls." And she says, "Yes, I am." And I was like, that's such a nice, like, way to like wrap a bow around the whole like theme of this movie and who Buffy is.
And I think also too, I think that's why like I loved the Buffy series too, because you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar is like the premier Buffy. You know, in terms of I always think of the episode where like it's prom and they give her the umbrella because she's been protecting everybody, but they don't really know how or why. But they just get a sense that a lot of things could have been worse for them had Buffy not been there. And that to me, like, I always kind of get like a little choked up when I think about that, because like the whole time, like, you know, there's so much pressure on this character and what she represents and what she has to do in order to make the world a better place. And largely she's doing it without any sort of thanks. It's not like she gets paid for it. Like it's a big burden to bear, you know, as a teenage girl. And I always think of that, the umbrella episode, and I'm just like, oh, you know, they got it. Like, so in that little moment, she got to be like everybody else at that dance, you know, and it's just such a tiny little thing, but in like the scope of the whole series, like, I still think that's one of the best moments.
I love that. See, Heather, this is why you're considered a horror veteran, because you like are pinpointing details. I just rewatched the Buffy and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, the series kind of goes a little off the rails, and I don't know that like they ever really found the right male counterpart for her, because like I always have issues with like her relationship with Angel, even though I love David Boreanaz.
Yeah,
her relationship with Spike was always really strange and weird to me, because it was kind of, it was really damaging, I think, to the core of who that character was for a while, even though I know they kind of rewrote Spike in a different light towards the end. But yeah, like I just, you know, again, when you're kind of growing up and you don't have a lot of strong female characters to look towards. And it's funny because I've heard people say like, well, I don't like thinking of like strong female characters. I just like thinking of female characters. And that's something I've heard like somebody like Gina Davis say before and things like that, where women are just inherently strong. But yet when they're presented in a certain way in stories, like we have to call them strong female characters.
Yeah.
But there is a strength that comes from watching a teenage girl having to literally save the world week in and week out and put herself on the line, put her family on the line and, you know, her relationships and things like that. You know, I think there's something really interesting about that. And I honestly don't think we'll ever see a TV series like that again.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. I was actually gonna ask. So why do you think it was just like the time that it was released that the show and Buffy as a character had such an impact? Because you said you're not sure if it would have as much of an impact nowadays.
I do, because I think, I think television in general is like a medium has sort of shifted these days, where it's like everything's either bingeable or we're getting a lot more like 30-minute episodes of stuff, or people are sort of going for like big, like the big box mystery kind of thing. And so it's the dynamics of the storytelling has changed a little bit. I think a lot of that came from when Walking Dead started. And you were mentioning American Horror Story. I think the 1-2 punch of those really kind of changed stuff a little bit. And so I think things like Vampire Diaries were successful because they tapped into sort of like the soap opera elements of where you had a collection of characters that you were always following, where Buffy was always the anchor, but there was, you know, there was of course the Scooby Gang and things like that. But I think what's really sucks is these days, and I hate to say it because it's like, it's just, you see this all the time, but like anytime, like, you know, we were talking about Black Widow earlier, like anytime you present a character, a female character is like the central character in a movie or a TV show or any kind of story now, it's like, all of a sudden it's like there's an agenda attached with it. You know, and I hate this, like, you know, suddenly you're making it quote unquote woke. And it's like, no, that's not it at all. You know, and it's just, I think that it was just the perfect storm of the right place, right time for that show to debut when it did, because back then WB was like really doing these fantastic like teen shows, you know, so like Dawson's Creek had come out. Yeah. It started to become Buffy might've been before Dawson's. I'm trying to remember how that played out, but they both were kind of hitting at the same time. And I think teen entertainment today is just skewed a little differently than it was, you know, gosh, now we're talking like almost 20 or so years ago now. God.
It's wild. I know, it's weird.
Like, actually, we're talking almost like 25 years ago, because I remember watching the Buffy pilot and it was like 97. So that was almost 25 years ago.
That's wild.
Wow. It was 25 years ago.
Okay, now I'm depressed.
That's wild. Oh no.
that's what we're here for.
Yes, yay.
But what about Donald Sutherland in this movie? He's the best. Like, he's too good for this movie.
I thought you were gonna say he's too what, Zach?
It's just funny that like such a distinguished actor, and I mean, he has done horror stuff in the past, and
his so agent was like, well, Rucker Howard's in it. He's like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah. Okay.
Apparently, he wasn't the easiest guy to work with on this either.
Ooh, okay.
So, I mean, because he's Donald Sutherland. And what's interesting is I've also heard stories that Kiefer Sutherland's actually notoriously terrible to work with as well. So maybe it's like a family thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's just a Sutherland thing. But yeah, like, because for me, like, as a kid, like, I remember watching Invasion 78. Was like, I think the first Donald Sutherland movie I remember.
Okay.
And that's always been like one of my very favorite like horror sci-fi movies ever. But I remember thinking like, wow, this is so strange. Cause like Paul Rubens, I get, because like he was kind of coming off the Pee-wee thing.
Yeah.
And there was like the stuff that happened in the theater that sort of derailed his career. So this was kind of him stepping out of the Pee-wee shadow you know, you have a lot of up and coming people like Christy Swanson and Hillary Swank. And, you know, then you have like Rucker Hauer, who's just there to obviously have a good time. And he did. And then you have Donald Sutherland, who's like this like Oscar nominated person. You're like, wow, is he in like a totally different movie? But apparently like he was really horrible to Christy Swanson.
Because they seem like they have good chemistry. And I don't know, maybe that's just because, I don't know.
They're good actors.
Maybe. They're good actors, yeah.
Yeah, I actually really like the scene when they're just having that moment where they're talking after like their training.
Yeah.
And he asks her like what she wants to do. And and then of course she like ends it with like, you know, well, it's like, gosh, we wouldn't want to have any fun or anything. But I like that to me is like the Slayer watcher relationship, I think is always been key to what makes the Buffy sort of stories work so well, because, you know, clearly in this movie, you know, Buffy has zero parental support whatsoever, which was very typical, I think, of that time. You know, so she needed somebody to be there for in that role. But yeah, apparently he was not a great person to work with. And he would like, I guess, like I was reading an article that Christy Swanson, like she did an interview about it like 5 or 10 years ago. And she was talking about how like he was notorious for like just changing lines in the middle of a scene without telling anybody. So like everybody would just stop and be like, what? Like, how do we I don't know what to do, which of course.
That's so annoying.
Yeah, which kind of
throws off
everybody's
rhythm. I feel
like
if you don't want to be on set, you'd want to get through things like a little more quickly and not jeopardize the time that it takes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so upsetting. What a bummer.
Yeah. But I mean, I get it. It's a testament to their talents that they were actually still able to make it work. And of course, editing is your best friend when you make a movie. So, you know.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of Buffy's parents, real quickly, I love the mom when Buffy comes home all dirty and it's late.
Yeah, and she's got blood on her.
She's got blood on her. And the mom comes up. She goes, do you know what time it is? And she goes, it's about 10. Oh, good. I thought my watch was broken. Oh, that was funny. I mean, it's sad, yes, but but it was funny.
Candy Clark, who got top billing at the closing credits of this movie, which I was very surprised to see. I was like, okay, did you notice
that's
that?
Her name?
Right as the credits start going, it's just her name as Buffy's
Candy Clark
mom.
As
and then
Buffy's
we
mom.
Get into
really,
yeah. And you'd think with people like Donald Sutherland and Rutger Hauer and all that, you know, it's not like she was the standout name. So I just thought that was, I was trying to figure out what that was, but hey,
right,
more power to her.
That's so interesting,
yeah,
yeah.
I was like, wait, what? Okay.
Did you guys notice young Thomas Jane and young Ben Affleck in this movie?
What? Yes.
No. I noticed Ben. Yes. I only noticed Thomas Jane in IMDb credits, but I didn't see him.
Where was Thomas Jane?
Me and Nina, I paused it and I said, wait a second. Is that Thomas Jane? And she goes, who? And I said, Thomas Jane from The Mist. I made you sit through that devastating movie and you don't remember who Thomas Jane is?
I love Thomas Jane.
I absolutely love The Mist. But anyways, he was, is it Zeph?
Yes.
He owns the garage where Luke Perry's character works.
That was Thomas Jane.
Did he talk?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't notice.
That's how I noticed, was because of his voice. I was like, wait a second. I know that voice.
Oh my gosh.
I still can't get over it. David Arquette, just like everyone. It just blows my mind.
Yeah. The obvious Scream reference, the only one that I've ever noticed in anything that we've watched so far, David Arquette.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
I got this one, guys.
Thanks, Casey.
I love his scene when Benny goes floating up to,
that's probably my favorite part.
Yes.
Yeah, to Pikes. God, why can't I think of Pike's room? Because first of all, that was like such a great homage to like Salem's Lot.
Yes,
Which is also, again, I'm an old, so it's one of my favorite like vampire movies ever.
No, it's great.
But he's like, you're floating, and I love the back and forth. And if it makes you feel any better, like because of this movie, Luke Perry and David Arquette actually became like best friends.
Oh,
and they stayed best friends. Basically up until Luke passed away.
Oh my God. I still can't just get over that. I can't believe it.
Yeah. It was really tough. Yeah. I don't know if you, did you guys, because I'm also like a wrestling nerd, but did you hear about like a few years ago, David Arquette had this death match in Los Angeles and he almost died?
I know he has that documentary, so I'm assuming that must have some connection.
It's in there too. Yeah. Okay. And there's also the wrestler who was in the match with David Arquette. He had an episode of Dark Side of the Ring where they also talked about it as well. So here's a little interesting story, because Luke Perry was there because his son used to wrestle for that company, and his son, Jack, now wrestles for AEW.
Okay.
Yeah, his son is a wrestler called Jungle Boy.
Okay.
And he's become like really popular and stuff. So, but Luke would go to all of Jack's shows. So it just so happened this show, it was like December 2018, I want to say. And there was supposed to be a death match with this guy, Nick Gage, who's like a really hardcore death match wrestler. And the guy that he was supposed to go against was hurt. So David Arquette, being the nice guy, and he's on his wrestling comeback thing, he was like, okay, I'll come in and fill in. Why not? You know, and basically, like, David Arquette has no business being in a death match. His documentary, by the way, is fantastic, and it made me cry. Just like how much he put of himself into that whole process. Mm-hmm. Of really wanting to be taken seriously because he loved professional wrestling and how fans reacted to him back in his WCW days when he became champion, and it became this huge, terrible thing for him. So because of this, so like he goes to the show, and Jack wrestled that night too. So Luke Perry was there to support David Arquette and his son. So he's backstage. And so like they get into this death match. And there's this one really bad spot where Nick Gage hits David Arquette with a light tube. And it's like one of many light tubes. There's pizza cutters, there's light tubes, there's barbed wire. It's all kinds of stuff.
Oh, man.
It's, Casey's face is like, oh, my God. It's a lot. But the one time he hits him with the light tube, it actually cracked and goes into David Arquette's jugular.
Oh, my God.
And all of a sudden, like, just an unholy amount of blood starts spurting, and you can see David grabs his neck, and he genuinely has this look on his face like, I think I'm gonna die.
And it's a death match, so dude.
Yeah, so he ran out of the ring, which was sort of throwing everybody off, because in wrestling, you just sort of finish your matches.
Right.
And then he realized, okay, it's bad, but I can go out there and finish. So he does, but it was literally like the minute he finished the match, like it was Luke Perry that had to take him to the emergency room.
Holy shit.
They had to like get him into the hospital like immediately because he was losing like pints of blood. And
oh my God.
Do you know what documentary year?
What year was this? Do you know?
I think it was 2018.
Oh, so it's fairly recent.
It was, yeah. Because I think it was like, within like the next year, Luke had passed away.
Oh, Jesus.
And they also talk about that in the David Arquette documentary too, because David really struggled with depression after that. I think he's bipolar also. And so he goes on like ketamine treatments to really help even himself out.
Mm-hmm.
And he spiraled really badly after Luke died very suddenly.
Terrible.
I love the fact that like, it's almost 30 years later, like they were still best friends because of this movie.
They really do. You know, we were talking about chemistry. They really do have solid chemistry. And it's nice to know that it wasn't just acting in this case, at least.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Man, yeah. Benny's his name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the movie. Yeah.
I like to think that Benny didn't die either, because he just gets sprayed, but he never gets
a good point.
He never dies.
Right.
That's true.
I would have loved to see that sequel.
They'll reboot the series for like a special season, and he'll come back and he'll be riding the wave of Scream 5 and all. It'll be a whole new like 90s throwback. Talk about 25 years ago.
I will be there.
Yeah, ditto. Same.
Right before Paul Rubens bites Benny, one of them does call boobs yabos.
Oh, yeah. I thought about that because your yabos comment a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
From Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
Is it weird that Hocus Pocus being a kid's movie is such... I've never seen a kid's movie that's more focused on virginity in my life.
Yeah.
Other than maybe Monster Squad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Monster Squad,
that's
so
funny. I literally just rewatched both of these movies, and this same thought crossed my mind. I'm like, why are they talking about it? This is inappropriate. First of all, kids don't understand the reference, like what we're talking about, even though it's so plot specific. Mm-hmm. But it also feels very like, yeah, not age appropriate. But oh, so going back to the official, like, first time we see a quote-unquote monster in this, Paul Reubens character. I used to watch Buffy, this movie, all the time when I was really little, and that scene haunted me. Like, of all the scenes in this movie, I know we talked about it's not that scary. For whatever reason, that scene was genuinely just scared me.
When he just comes around the...
Yeah, there's the something carousel. About it. I think it reminds... I was also scared of the... Where, like, the penguin lives in Batman Returns.
Oh, yeah.
And that scene always reminded me of this.
Maybe you're just scared of Paul Reubens.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
Tie-in. He's in
Batman Returns.
Yeah, he's Penguin's dad.
Oh, my God. Is he?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow. It's been a long time since I've watched that.
That's it.
Dan, I think you're just scared of Paul Reubens.
Paul Reubens in carnivals or any kind of zoo.
I saw Paul Reubens in Dallas. We went to a, I don't know if it was
coming around a carousel. Yeah,
it must have been 35 year anniversary of Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Yeah. And they played it on the big screen. And then he came out and like told stories about getting it made and all this stuff. But when we walked in, everyone had to put their cell phones in a little pouch.
Oh.
And they locked it. And you couldn't open it again until you left.
Hmm.
And it was, you know, to prevent phones going off and pictures getting taken and stuff. And I was like, Paul, like, what the F, man?
I do that all the time. Anytime people come over, I'm like, all right, here's the bag.
Oh, gosh. We actually had that with a press screening once. It was for Jurassic World.
Uh-huh.
And it was the first time ever that they like took everybody's phones and put them in those lock bags and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I'll have you know, somebody ended up having a seizure during the press screening. Nobody could do anything about it because nobody had a phone. And the press people, like the studio people weren't sitting outside. So we were like, somebody had to run and get somebody from AMC to like call 911. Holy and I'll crap. Tell you what, nobody, we've never had people take phones away again at a screen.
That's wild.
Yeah. I never actually finished the movie because it was going to be like an hour until they could reset it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And because they had to deal with the poor guy in the theater and everything like that. So we were like, well, all right, I guess we've just seen enough. So I never even reviewed it because I was like, well, I didn't see the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
They never made that mistake again. I was like, really? For Jurassic World, you want us to take our phones away?
Also, it's a movie that like celebrates technology. It's kind of ironic.
Yeah. And also like when things leak, it's never press.
Yeah.
It's usually people who work at movie theaters.
Yeah.
So,
right.
No offense to people working at movie theaters, but it just kind of is.
And oddly enough, in this screening, someone's phone went off and he stopped and he was like pissed.
Oh my God.
And I was like, man, like,
you're not cool.
Just like, don't worry about it.
It was just like a little piece of my childhood kind of just like, it didn't shatter, but it just kind of cracked a little bit.
I can understand like if you are a performer and you're doing like however many shows or live performances, I can see that if you keep getting that like, a trend of phones going off or people just, you know, looking through their lens. I get it. But at the same time, I don't know. And I'm no one to talk, but I feel like it's just like, who cares? Just let it go. You can be upset about it. You can be annoyed by it. Maybe don't.
Well, that's
because like you said, it ruins that image.
Yeah. I mean, it comes with the territory when you're, you know what I mean? Like,
Paul, how do you pronounce his name in this movie?
Oh, I don't know his name in this movie.
Because I saw it in the IMDb credits, but I was like, oh, wait,
I don't even know if they ever call him by name.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't know his name either until I looked it up.
Yeah. So we'll just call him Paul.
Good old Paul.
I was a little, I guess, confused. So he loses his arm, right? And he's apparently like 1,200 years old or something like that. And he's apparently, I mean, if he was 1,200 years old, he's been through some shit, right? And he never lost a limb in that many years.
Even like, a finger?
If he had to go
through...
He never
crossed paths with Luke Perry before, I think, is the lesson here.
Exactly.
That's true.
I was a Dylan more than a Brandon growing up. No offense to Jason Priestley, who seems like a really nice guy. And actually, I rewatched 90210 last year through the pandemic, because I think a lot of us, did you guys all like start like rewatching stuff through the pandemic just to kind of like, okay, you know, what else are we going to do?
Yeah, I started rewatching. We were just talking about it. Dawson's Creek.
Nice.
I didn't watch Dawson's Creek during the pandemic, but I did buy all the Dawson's Creek DVDs when I worked at FYE because they were on sale, and I had never watched the show when it was on TV, and so I was like 23, and I watched all the way through Dawson's Creek and loved it.
It's so good. I always would catch like episodes when I was younger, but my brother would always tease me. And now I'm like watching it. I'm all like all excited. And then Cody would walk in the room. He's like, what the fuck are you watching? He's like, what is this dialogue? I'm like, it's amazing. You need to get out of here right now. He's like, they're so dramatic. I'm like, I know.
He's like, it was very dramatic to be a teenager in the 90s. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I went back and rewatched 90210, and I still was a Dylan, but Brandon really grew on me, I think, because I could kind of watch everything more condensed than having to wait for everything to plant week by week. And I was like, wow, like he really had to go through some stuff in this show that I just totally had forgotten about. But then Hulu does the thing where like they didn't have certain episodes when you get in the later seasons.
Oh, that's annoying.
Because of the music rights. And so like after season 8, and it was like, here's episodes 1, 3, 9 through 12, 16, 18.
Good luck.
I was like, forget it. I was like, I'm out now. So I got to through like the beginning of season 8, and I was like, fine. I was like, you win, Hulu. So, cause I only own like 1 through 5 on DVD still. So
they're encouraging you to write your own fan fiction.
I think so.
One of my favorite, I mean, I feel like one of everyone's favorite Buffy episodes is the one with where they literally can't speak. Yes. Oh,
it's so good.
Oh, my God. He's incredible.
Zach and I are just like, yeah.
Oh, that's right. You've never seen it.
No.
Yeah. Oh. Have you seen the series, Casey, or no?
No. No, I never.
Oh, if this movie didn't really click for you, I think the show would.
I agree 100%.
Well, maybe if I ever stop watching Forged in Fire.
Oh, yeah. But you can feel studio meddling in the movie, where the show just feels like they just kind of go everywhere. It's so good.
You know, you'll watch the first half of the first season and it's solid, but it really picks up towards the end of that first season. And then by season 2 is when it really gets going, and it's fantastic. And it's really like really fantastic drama, great performances. And I think that's when like everything really starts to hit its stride.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, right after the movie was over, there was a, what do you want to watch next? And they had Buffy, the TV series. And so I played season 1, episode 1. I only watched like the intro of it where,
good God.
You know my feelings on Sarah Michelle Gellar. So we'll just leave
it. Oh, I hate your feelings about Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I know you do. I know we disagree on this. You but
mean,
but
wait,
what are your feelings on Sarah Michelle Gellar? No, are we about to fight?
Yeah, it's bad.
You're not going to besmirch Daphne like that, are you?
Yeah. Or Cece.
Guys, I think there's a bad connection.
Oh, no, where's it, Zach?
Honest. Listen, I'll prove it.
The stars at night are big and bright.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
Good, then we can talk about Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah. It'll just be back and forth. Like, she's great, right? Yeah, she's great. She's great, though, right? Oh, yeah, I think she's great. Do you think she's great? She's great, yeah.
She should have been the main character in I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Thank you. Oh, my God. She has the best
Jennifer Love Hewitt is so... Helen is so great, and she's just... I just rewatched it, like, for 4th of July weekend, and I was like, gosh, I really want more of Sarah Michelle Gellar and her bitchy sister.
They even set her up as like the protagonist, because she's the one who has like the ambitions, and then the ambitions kind of fall apart, and she's kind of like finding herself in her hometown, and that's frustrating. They could have done a nice, and if they wanted, they could have done a nice like bait and switch, like a Nightmare on Elm Street thing where you think it's Tina, but it's actually Nancy. And in this case, Helen could have been our Nancy. Damn it.
Yeah. Man. Speaking of Nightmare, I don't know if you've ever noticed, somebody mentioned this on Twitter, but I've spent so many times studying like the Scream movies because I'm super obsessed.
We love Scream here on this show.
Yes, but I'm sure that maybe I'm not saying anything that you guys don't already know. But did you realize like Cece is actually dressed like Nancy in her scene in the sorority house with the pink shirt and the brown pants, like Nancy's ensemble in school?
God, I never That's cool. put that together.
Yeah, there's a lot of color coding that happens with the costuming throughout the whole season, the whole series. Like it's really real. It's really like sort of noticeable in part four, especially in the finale when everybody's sort of color coded how the characters are in the original finale. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love like little details like that. So.
Oh my God, Heather, you just opened like a door. Yeah. I have been trying to transform this podcast into a solely a Scream podcast. I've yet to succeed, but little by little, there are strength in numbers, and with your
Which
support,
actually,
we can make it happen.
It reminds me that this episode is about Buffy. So, Zach, I would like to know how grossed out were you when she threw a dirty Q-tip into her locker? Because I immediately thought, I bet Zach was really upset about that.
Oh, I do know Zach does not like Q-tips. I remember you telling me that in college.
He just doesn't like gross things.
Yeah, random memory that I have of you.
I don't have anything wrong with Q-tips.
What? You told me that you were told that they are dangerous.
Oh, yeah, I was told they were dangerous because they are dangerous.
Yeah. I just mean because you get grossed out about stuff like that. And she just used a Q-tip and threw it in her locker.
She did. I really wasn't too concerned with that because I was more thinking about Donald Sutherland in that scene in the locker room.
About how he was in a naked place?
He was in a naked place.
Yeah, inappropriate.
But before we move on, Casey, I'm sorry. I know this episode is about Buffy, but it's time for the How I Met Your Monster conspiracy theory of the week.
Okay.
Is, and this has nothing to do with Buffy.
Good.
Is Scream... No, fuck it. Never mind. It doesn't.
What
work.
You can't bail this.
It doesn't. It was a stretch, Danny. It was a fucking stretch.
It's always a stretch.
I was gonna say it's Scream in the same universe as Nightmare on Elm Street, but
I don't think it could be just because they reference horror movies.
Oh yeah.
I'm trying to think though.
Ooh, could it be?
I'm trying to think when they make a direct reference to Nightmare in the Scream movies.
They do in the first one.
Oh, well, they do in the very opening scene, yeah.
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 Oh, that's right.
All right, never mind.
And then eventually they do the funny joke of like it's some Wes Carpenter flick.
Yes.
Wes Carpenter. Nice.
I love in that opening scene though when she's like, well, the first one was, but the rest sucked. And yet Wes was like involved in other ones. So I don't know. I give him a lot of credit.
I know. In that moment, I'm like, but New Nightmare is a masterpiece. Yeah. Don't say such things.
Yeah. And Dream Warriors, yes. Come on.
Again, we are a New Nightmare fans here on the show as well.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I'm in such good company. I love this.
You are, yes. New Nightmare. You're kind
well,
of
actually
company. Once Casey and Zach start watching Buffy, then you're in great company.
Actually, we'll I'm going to tie this into a little self-promotion, Danny, because the first time we interacted with you, Heather, was... you had reached out to us about our short film Cottonmouth.
Yes.
Starring Heather Langenkamp.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a little email interview that was on
Thank
Daily Dead.
Thank you for that, by the way. That was wonderful.
Absolutely.
Oh, you're so welcome.
So if anybody wants to hear more about Cottonmouth, you can go to cottonmouthfilm.com.
And also, I'm going to self-promote around, circle. I'm going to circle around and do this really quick.
Totally.
Also, because New Nightmare is very much tied into some real life things that Heather Langenkamp was going through at the time with her husband, David Anderson, who is one of the artists that's in my book that comes out in October.
Oh, awesome. Yes.
So there's, I get to actually talk about how him and Heather met and how they sort of came together and how she actually works at his shop, which is kind of cool. So that's kind of like what her day job is now, quote unquote, is like she works like at an effects house, which is kind of awesome.
It's amazing. Heather, I'm assuming you have, but have you seen the behind the scenes footage on Cabin in the Woods with Heather and her husband just chatting horror and movie makeup? Yes. Oh, it's so good.
Yes. Yes. And she's actually a character in, I don't remember if it was Star Trek or Star Trek Into Darkness.
I think it's Into Darkness.
Yeah. Yeah. She's actually an alien on one of the holodecks or something like that, which I thought was kind of cool.
Which I think I heard was, it was, they needed like an extra alien, and her husband actually, well, she and her husband both had this like monster already. So they just basically dressed her up with this pre-made monster and just made it an alien for the movie. And it was just, it worked out.
Oh, that's cool.
If I'm not mistaken, it actually might've been one of the aliens that his dad, Lance, had done for Last Starfighter that ended up not being used.
Are you serious?
I think so.
That's cool. Awesome.
So, cool. But yeah, that's why I always love New Nightmares, just because of how it blends sort of, it's, you know, of course we talk about the meta narrative now and things like that, but just how it mirrored things that were going on in their life at that time.
Yeah.
It's just, that to me is what makes it so scary. And I'm sure, and that was something we talked about, because I, you know, I asked him, I'm like, you know, how did it feel to like see your real life, like basically being played out for the entertainment of people, and it's also incorporated into a Nightmare on Elm Street series or story. And he was like, yeah, it was really weird. He's like, and I would never listen to REM because there's like this scene where he's singing Losing My Religion, and he's like I don't even like REM. And I just thought that was funny.
Did he mention at all if they ever came to him to play himself, basically, since Heather was doing it?
They had talked about it, but The way that David and Heather work is like, if one of them is working, one of them was home with the kids.
Gotcha.
So if she, you know, with her taking on a movie and plus New Nightmare being her being the central character again, where, you know, she had to be gone every day and things like that. So it was kind of his job to be at home, taking care of stuff. So, yeah, but I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
I was like, oh God. Like, I just kind of thought, like, because we'd had so many like stalker issues in the 90s with celebrities, like, I thought it was just kind of building off of there. And it was like, oh no, this was like a real thing. Like, they left for England for 6 months because of it.
God, that's so scary.
Man.
So,
yeah.
Some people are terrible. Horrifying.
I know. Yeah. So, I'm sorry I got us off the Buffy track again.
That's the thing about Buffy. She just opens the door to so much
culture,
so many pop culture references.
But I want to jump right to the dance scene in Buffy. When the vampires start breaking in through the windows. I got a very big Demons vibe. Have you guys seen Demons and Demons 2?
Yes.
I've seen from Demons, Lamberto Bava. I haven't seen it since I was... which I shouldn't have, but much younger. But I remember, like, I know, like, the idea of them, like, taking over the theater and everything.
Mm-hmm. I just got, like, with, like, the colors and the way they were doing it, I just got a strong, that movie popped in my head as soon as that dance scene started going on, and I thought that was pretty cool.
I could totally see that. Although Demons doesn't have a vampire DJ.
That's true.
Which is a little bit of a bummer. but yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Demons. I highly recommend, if you haven't seen it. I'm a huge fan of like movies that sort of take place at like movie theaters and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first one, and like the second one is like this big apartment building kind of situation, which I'm assuming the new Evil Dead movie that I think takes place in a high rise.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet we're going to see some Demons 2 vibes in there.
Okay. Then well. All right, I'm going to rewatch both of them. Well, I haven't seen part 2, awesome. But I'll watch them both before then. I like that.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of the vampires in this movie, the way they're presented is, you were talking about, you were a little confused about Lothos's relationship with Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a sort of like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the right word. There's an inconsistency to their behavior, I guess. where sometimes they're standoffish, sometimes they're just like menacing, and sometimes they're straight up evil, like ready to attack and kill. And we do get like these different levels of them, and especially in that like big finale when they're sort of just, I don't know, like more taunting than anything. Like when Buffy's actually fighting them outside, and I know this is just, it's a movie thing, a budget thing, I'm sure. And I found it entertaining at the very least. But when she'll like be fighting one and the vampires are just sort of like clawing at her, but not actually moving. I love that.
Yeah. That whole ending felt super anticlimactic to me.
Yeah. Oh, really? I made a note here. I said he died so easily for being like a master.
Well, yeah, but it was even like, I mean, okay, so when she hits Paul Rubens with the, right, that's funny because he keeps going, but even that's, still, that's, it was just like, they're just standing there and then all of a sudden she's like,
you know? It's definitely a budget thing because once they get to the show, like, it's every vampire death is so epic and they like turn to dust and like, it's so intense and dramatic. Yeah. So at least, I don't know. I guess I am also coming at it from that perspective. So like, I can't help but see the vampires like from both the movie and the show as kind of being the same. But I also watched Buffy when I was very young. So we always talk about like that nostalgia factor. Mm-hmm. Even when you bring up points where you're like, this didn't work or this was confusing. I'm like, but
it was much fun.
I just try to justify it. But I also get it. Yeah.
Well, I think also because a lot of the 90210 cast didn't, they weren't really able to go out and make movies when they were doing 90210. And they made a special sort of situation for Luke to be able to do this. Mm. So I think their production time originally was supposed to be 16 weeks and they made the movie in 5.
Oh my God.
Shit. So they had to work quickly. So that probably was part of it. And also, this was something I mentioned. I did a podcast on this, like, gosh, like 6 or 7 years ago. And somebody brought this up, and it's always one of my favorite things ever, is that the production company behind this movie is actually Dolly Parton's production company, Sandollar.
No way.
So Dolly Parton is the gift that keeps on giving.
Okay. Where did I just saw, I just found this out like a few weeks ago where Dolly Parton is talking about the Buffy franchise. And I was like, come again?
Like, yeah. So we owe it all to Dolly.
That's, wow, we that's owe everything awesome. To Dolly, but that's,
so that also could amazing. Be part of the reason why it got softened a little bit too.
Sure.
You know,
that's a good point. Dolly's like, no,
we're not making 30 Days of Night, says Dolly Parton. And you're like, okay, you got it.
You're like, sure.
Soft and happy vampires. Here we come.
I also wondered why, like, so this is before that scene when they're in like that, weird, where are they? In some sort of amusement thing?
Yeah, or? It's like there's a sign out front when they go in, but it's like parade floats.
Okay, well, that place was really, it looked really neat. But I'm wondering why, like, when they go in there, she's just like, oh, okay, this is how this goes. I wrote very few notes, okay? So I don't really remember what happened here. I just wrote, why is she not questioning what's going on? Because that was the scene where Rutger Hauer character, because I don't remember what his name was.
Yeah.
She's there with Merrick? I wrote Merrill on accident. Merrick.
She's there with Merrick, yeah.
She's there with Merrick and Lothos, and that's when he's first like, oh, she's not ready for us yet, blah, 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 and she's just like going with it.
I would argue that Buffy has been sort of in that sort of spectator mode, letting Merrick sort of guide her through it to be like, this is what's happening, this is what's up, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. But like, then he dies in that scene. So like now she's sort of left to her own devices.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. And she's just holding him like, oh.
Well, yeah, that's
very confused.
I'm just gonna chalk it up to she was just a teenager and was struggling to sort of deal with the emotions.
Okay.
That came with like an evil vampire and her, the death of her new friend.
Okay.
There is a funny bit that they never settle because she goes up to save Pike and she jumps on the vampire's shoulders and like flips him over or whatever. And she lands on Pike and they have like this moment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But they never kill that vampire. He just like rolls away.
There's plenty of vampires.
He's like, touche.
Yeah.
He's like, and, you got me.
And they only show her like these vampires outside and then they go back inside. And he's like, did you do all this? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, what?
What? Well, I think some of the students kind of were like getting into it. They were killing people here and there.
Yeah.
And then you have Stephen Root handing out like detention slips.
Yes. Great. Yes.
It was a mortal enemy of vampires. So I don't know if you knew this.
Stephen Root, who was in True Blood as a vampire.
Yes.
If you guys watched
he was
True
also
Blood.
In Dodgeball.
Yes.
Not as a vampire, no. As far as we know.
And also, wasn't he the stapler guy in Office
yes.
Space?
Yeah.
Yes.
I couldn't believe when he's the principal, right? Throughout mm-hmm. the whole movie, he's acting very principally. And then he slams Hillary Swank's head
yes.
against
into
the wall.
The wall.
And I was like, what?
Yeah, she just says, I don't remember what she says. And he just goes, wham, and then she falls.
She's having her freak out.
I must
out
have looked away during that scene.
Yeah, she's freaking out and he just like pushes her on the head and she hits the wall and goes down.
I love this scene where I forget her name, but one of Buffy's old friends just like stabs the vampire. She's like, ew, ew, ew.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think this is one of those cases where, you know, you have a movie that's billed as a horror comedy, but you definitely put the comedy before the horror.
Yeah.
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 And it's okay. Like that's, right. You know, for me, like I've always loved horror comedies. That's sort of like my bread and butter. So I'm okay with it because there's plenty of other options. Like if you want to watch a vampire movie, that's horror comedy, but it's a little scary. Then you go watch Lost Boys, yeah. You know?
Ah, yes. Yep.
So, which I caught your Lost Boys reference at the beginning.
Thank you. Thank you.
It was appreciated. So, you know, for me, this is more of a comedy than it is a horror. And that's okay. Like that's fine. It's, you know, it does mostly what it sets out to do, which I think is ultimately creating a really amazing TV series to follow.
Yeah. And kind of like what you said about Tremors earlier, it is sort of a gateway movie for potential horror fans where it walks that fine line where it's all the creepy elements without the actual like intense scares.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like, if you dig that vibe, you might like this or this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Like as I get older, I always kind of forget how safe it is. Like, cause you mentioned, you know, that, you know, there's vampires standing around her and she's like, I'm going to flip a few of them. And then I'm just going to walk off and go find Lotos now. And you're just like, oh, okay. Where, you know, the TV series is like, oh no, we're killing everybody. Like, you know, it's a literal bloodbath.
Yeah, it's like insane.
Did you guys watch the credits and all the fun stuff that happens in the credits?
Oh, yes.
You didn't see that, Casey? So they do
Casey
like...
checked
listen,
out.
No, no.
She's
so,
like, I'm done.
So when I started watching it last night. I got a migraine. I had to shut it off. And then I watched the last like 20 minutes right before we recorded.
So, oh, okay. Well, if you watch really through the time. Credits... They have like a TV sitting on like some wood pallets or something. It's like a very dramatic setup, but they're doing like TV interviews with the high school kids at the dance. They go really dark for a moment when her ex-boyfriend and her friend who he's cheating on her with, remember they were like in the car doing stuff? And then when they're doing the interviews with him and her, they go to ask her a question and she just breaks down and says, I can't believe I let you do that to me. And she runs away. And I was like,
God, that
oh
went
my
over my
God,
head.
That just got deep and dark and I don't like it. But then after that, they bring it back with the Paul Rubens still dying in the,
I also love how Hillary Swank's character has sort of an arc, but only if you watch the credits. Like you kind of see her. I don't know if it's an evolution, but you at least see her personality from like kind of being snotty and kind of a jerk to everyone, all of her friends. And then she sort of has her like come to Jesus moment, her breakdown where it's like you finally see her humanity. But it's only if you watch the credits. Otherwise, you don't get the arc.
And the one kid says, he doesn't know how to like what the vampires were or whatever. So he says, I think they were young Republicans.
It's canon. All vampires are young Republicans.
Ooh, boy.
Okay. So now I think it's time to talk about our favorite reveals.
Okay.
My favorite is the the vampires in the dance, breaking into the dance.
Okay.
Just because the vibe it gave off, that was my favorite.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the Benny moment, to be honest. Because again, I'm being such a big Salem's Lot nerd. The scenes, those scenes when I was a kid terrified me. It's the reason I have never slept with my window, like my curtains open in my bedroom since I was like 7 years old because of Salem's Lot.
Yeah.
And so I love the fact that like you just sort of plays on like that whole vibe of like, what, you know, why are you outside of my window? And at first, like, he's like sleepily trying to open the window. And then he's like, wait, hold on. And he has that moment where like, oh, I don't live on the first floor. How is this even happening?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that for me was like sort of like one of my favorite moments.
Let me in, Pike. I'm hungry.
Go home, Ben.
I'm hungry. You're floating. Come on, man. Get away from here. I'm hungry.
So Casey, why don't you go ahead with your favorite reveal of Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Well, I didn't even think about it. I forgot that was part of the show.
Wow. Okay.
No respect for Buffy.
No. I didn't hate the movie. I didn't hate the movie or like I said, I was very confused, but I didn't like hate it. Again, finished it really quickly before. But I guess it would probably be David Arquette because I did write that was probably my favorite thing about the entire movie was when he floated up into the window.
Danny, what about you?
I think I was like kind of split. The Paul Reubens reveal on the carousel always scared me as a kid, so I liked that. But I was also, this technically isn't really an intro, but the first time that, I don't even know if this is true even, when Lothos is in the bed, when Buffy goes to lay down, she's having that nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
That also is an image from this movie that haunted me. I used to always, like literally as a kid, would be worried that I'd look up and I would see Rutger Hauer looking over me. So it's tough to pick. But because that's technically not an introduction, since Buffy doesn't even really see him there officially, I'm going to go with Paul Reubens on a carousel.
Okay. I mean, that's a good one. Okay. Well, now I think it is time for a segment that I like to call The Real Monster.
Run, run, run as fast as you can. You can't catch me. I'm the Gingerbread Man.
You're a monster.
I'm not a monster here. You are. You and the rest of that fairy tale trash poisoning my perfect world. Now tell me, where are the others?
Eat me!
Yeah, so this movie, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, is filled with vampires and all kinds of monsters. Who do you all think is the real monster of Buffy the Vampire Slayer? Who wants to go first? Danny?
I have a few.
Take it away.
Okay, this may take the cake, but one of the real monsters in this movie is the simple act of talking during movies. So, yeah, that's a big contender for me. I also have the Buffy's boyfriend asking if he can borrow Buffy. Merrick showing up in the girls' locker room. Oh no, this is it. It's Kimberly buying the yellow jacket.
Despite telling
Buffy that she didn't like it and then calling it retro and, God damn it. That frustrated me because I'd be like, you guys could have just bought it together and matched. Also, Buffy's boyfriend. Yeah, maybe Buffy's boyfriend. I feel like that's a little more egregious of a, in the sin factor. Yeah, Buffy's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Buffy's boyfriend and best friend because they're both creeps.
I feel like an obvious answer would be Young Republicans. They just set that up really well. But I'd also say her parents.
Because
I get it. Like, I mean, my situation is different because like my mom was a single mom. So like I kind of parented myself and kind of growing up and everything like that. So like, you know, I was the way I was because of just how our situation was. My mom never left the house and told me to stay away from the Jag or anything like that.
Oh, really? You know, you didn't get that experience?
No, I didn't.
That was the one thing I connected to in this movie.
You're like, JK, I understand JK. Her so fully now.
I get it now.
But yeah, I think her parents are definitely a piece of work in this movie because they're just so checked out of her life. And I think that for this, that generation, which I guess is my generation, is like so many of our parents just were totally checked out. But I also think it's also an indictment on like how parents usually are in horror movies. Like they're usually pretty not, they're just such non-factors in these stories because when you become a teenager, you just, you know, you're off living your life outside of your parental units or whatnot. So, but yeah, the boyfriend too is pretty awful. He was the boyfriend in For Keeps, which was a movie I watched a lot when I was a kid.
Okay.
Which is the one For Keeps.
Yeah, it's the one where Molly Ringwald gets pregnant in high school and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have seen For Keeps. My sister used to watch that all the time. I just had like a flashback.
Yeah, it's kind of terrible, but sort of like soothingly terrible, if that makes sense.
Like where you're like, food.
Yeah, like when you're like a teenager, you're like, I can handle everything. And you're like, oh, maybe not this.
Casey, who do you have for a real monster?
Well, I also wrote Kimberly for the yellow jacket thing.
Yeah.
And then also I just wrote whoever made that fucking pig costume at the beginning.
That's my, that's like one of my first notes is that the pig mascot is the real monster.
It's busted.
Yeah, it's a little crazy. Yeah. I have the crowd during the cheer scene at the basketball game. The crowd is so like, if you really watch it, you can, it's so obviously staged. And the crowd reminded me of like a, I don't know if you guys have ever played like a basketball video game or like a sports video game where the crowd is
very
like
stiff.
Just like flat people. And they just like do this. That's what the crowd reminded me of.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't even notice that.
So I put that. I did have the jacket stealing. But I think the real monster for Buffy, for me, is the basketball coach.
Mm.
With his,
who has like this weird like Illuminati like sign when he's... He was all over the place.
And then when Sasha Jensen, I forget his name in the movie, when he's a vampire and he goes out to play in the game and he throws his jacket at the coach and the coach is trying to fold it
with like
his chin and like still coach at the same time. Oh, that was good.
Well, it's funny because Mark DiCarlo, he's actually like a comedian from Chicago. So I was very familiar with him coming into this. Because he used to do like, Second City in Chicago and stuff.
Okay.
So for me, I was just like, oh, okay. And he was also, he used to do some talk show too, and I'm totally blanking on it. Oh, it was the TV, it was like a, this like sort of dating game show in the 90s called Studs.
Studs?
Yes.
I missed that one.
Yeah. It's about as, you know, tasteful as it sounds. So as somebody who used to watch that show, I was very familiar with him as well from that.
Oh, that's great.
Okay. Well, I think that is all the time we have for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, except Danny's about to say something else.
I have one really dumb question.
Absolutely.
So you can kill a vampire with sunlight or a stake through the heart.
Okay.
Can you kill a vampire through decapitation?
Yes.
It depends what movie you're watching.
I think it depends on the rules. Like, I've seen it happen in other instances. I think it all kind of depends on the rules that you have.
Okay, because we were talking about, like, franchises being connected and, like, existing in the same universe. And Cassandra, one of the students who gets taken over, we don't see what happens to her after being bitten and turned into a vampire, but she does get decapitated at the start of Urban Legend. And I was curious if that may have been canon with her fate.
Oh my gosh. Danny, You just
conspiracy theory of the week.
Danny, you just nailed it. That is the How I Met Your Monster conspiracy theory of the week.
Yes.
You're telling me that NASA is going to kill the president of the United States with an earthquake.
Not exactly the kind of thing a Secret Service agent can, like, just throw himself on top of.
The whole Vietnam War was fought over a bet that Howard Hughes lost to Aristotle NASA.
The third issue this year, conspiracy theory.
Ultimately, it was basically that whole movie was just oh my gosh, what's her name? I can't believe I'm blanking on this right now. Why the Noxzema girl?
Rebecca Gayhart. Rebecca Gayhart
was essentially just saving the entire school from a vampire.
Yes, thank you.
Oh my gosh, this changes everything.
I mean, same when she kills Danielle Harris's character, because she knows that Michael comes after his family and he's inevitably going to come to the college and there may be more victims. So she's like, listen, I just need to trim the fat here and get rid of some of these connections to poor, I don't know.
And then Tara Reid eventually deals with aliens and Alone in the Dark.
Yes.
So it all makes sense now.
Praise be Rebecca Gayhart.
Jamie Blanks gave us this shared universe with Urban Legend, and we didn't even know it and appreciate it.
See, all these horror movies have been doing these shared universes for so long, but they're like, we don't need to talk about it. We're just going to do it. But then Marvel comes around, and they're like, oh, hey, look at us. And of course, it's the
horror
person.
It's
the squeaky wheel who gets the grease.
Yeah.
And so horror, there you go, Marvel. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you really think about it, it all comes back to Roger Corman and putting Dick Miller in everything.
Yep.
Oh my God, that's it.
And then it carrying into Joe Dante's movies, where Dick Miller was often playing his character from Bucket of Blood. So really, it's all Roger Corman.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Dante.
Oh my God, this is incredible.
Full circle.
All right. Well, Danny, if you don't have anything else, if it's okay, if I end the show,
I was just gonna say that Disney Plus does that thing where you can watch all of the MCU movies in order. Shudder should do that with all of these movies, where it's like they kind of have these vague connections. If you want to stretch it,
yes,
I'm just gonna wheel that out of the universe.
We have such good ideas for Shudder. They need to get on the ball here and give us a show.
I will send Sam Zimmerman an email, toot sweet, as soon as we're done, and be like, Sam, we just had this genius idea. You need to do this.
Yes.
Yes, I love it.
So before we get out of here, Heather, where can listeners find your new book?
So my new book, you can pre-order over at AM Inc. Publishing, I-N-K. So if you go to aminkpublishing.com, it's under their Dark Ink area. So it's there. I don't know if it's over on Amazon yet. I haven't actually looked, which I probably should do that.
It is on Amazon.
Oh, is it really?
Because I also found your previous book, Monster Squad.
Yes. Oh goodness. I didn't even realize. You just made my day.
Oh, that's
amazing. You think I'd be better at like promoting things and knowing these things. So what's interesting is like when I did Monster Squad that came out in 2017, that was like an initial 20 interviews, and now the series of Monster Makeup and Effects is 80, but I was able to reclaim the rights from those original 20. So for each of these volumes, it's going to be 5 of those original interviews, and some of them been tweaked a little bit and like, you know, a little extra stuff here and there. And I think the photo presentation is better, but then also, each book will also have at least 15 new interviews. And I actually think volumes 3 and 4 are probably going to be over 20 interviews each, because there's just so much that I keep, accumulating with stories and things like that. But yes, so you can find it apparently on Amazon. Yay. But yeah, you can also directly order it from the publisher, which I believe they're actually starting to ship out copies this week.
Oh, that's amazing.
Awesome.
Yes.
I'm going to order a copy. I am going to order your previous book and this one. I'm excited.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I always tell, because everyone's like, oh, should I order the first one? I'm like, you can, but this one's better. I think. I like the presentation a little bit more, and you'll get to all those stories through this series.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so that's where you can find information about the book.
Awesome. Okay. And where can our listeners find you on social media?
I'm pretty much only over on Twitter. So you can find me there at The Horror Chick.
Perfect. Awesome. Danny and Casey, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Slim. That's two M's like the candy.
Did you say Twitter?
Twitter, say Twitter and Instagram.
Twitter and Instagram.
Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome. Casey?
You can find me on Instagram at WolfMotherCasey.
All right. Perfect. And today's listener shout out goes to Samuel Jones for his continued support on social media. Thanks, Samuel. We appreciate you. Come back next week as we discuss the horrors of high school and puberty. That's right. Next week, we're going to prom with the 1976 classic Carrie. All right. Well, we would like to thank all of you for listening to the show, and we want to welcome all of our new listeners out there. Please make sure to subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts so that you never miss an episode, and visit us online at howimetyourmonster.com to learn more about the show and sign up for our newsletter to stay informed on upcoming episodes. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at How I Met Your Monster and on Twitter or Twitter at I Met Your Monster. Also, for all you YouTubers out there, you can now find full episodes of the show on our YouTube channel. Please make sure to like and subscribe. And last but not least, we would like to thank everyone who has left us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. This is helpful for the growth of our show, and we really appreciate it. If you'd like to help us reach a larger audience so that we can introduce more monsters to more people, head to ratethispodcast.com/monster. We'd like to thank Heather Wixon for joining us today to talk all things horror and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Thank you all for listening. Now go meet some monsters.